Hey everyone, welcome to Creep Your Heart Out. I'm Monica.
And I'm Nick.
And this is episode 5, which means we are 5 weeks into our brand new podcast.
Yeah.
I'm pretty excited. Yeah.
I am too. We're moving right along.
Yeah. We just got back from band practice, so we're a little sweaty, but we're ready.
Sweaty and ready.
Sweaty and ready for today's case. I had to redo this intro like 5 or 6 times because I suck and I'm super scatterbrained. It's been crazy. I kind of actually forgot that I didn't have a full case for today. I had researched like half a case and then I was like, oh shit, yeah, we got to record that tonight. So I had to finish it today and then we had to go to band practice. So now we're recording a little bit later on in the day, but that's fine. We got our beers ready and we're ready to go.
Yeah.
So, do you have anything you want to add before we get started?
Anything to add? Nope. I think let's just move right into this. And once again, I don't know if it's going to be gross or scary or weird or I don't know.
Probably so. All three. Speaking of scary and weird, I want to talk about last week's episode. If you haven't listened to last week's episode, we covered Dear David. It's super spooky. And I told you that when I was researching this, like I was sitting on the couch researching and I kept like freaking myself out. But then kind of after I was done researching this case, that case, I was fine. And then we covered it on the podcast and everybody kept commenting like on Facebook and Instagram. And they were like, holy shit, that's so scary. Like, I can't even look at the pictures. Like, everybody was freaking out. And I was like, oh, no big deal. Like, I'm fine. Like, I've already been over it. Well, remember Tuesday morning when I woke up and I said I was sweaty all night and I couldn't sleep. And then we put the air conditioner in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So Monday night, I fell asleep and I woke up at like 3 o'clock in the morning and I legit like looked into the corner of the room and I like swear to God, I was like, I hope David's not in that corner. I like literally, and like I kept trying to go back to sleep, but I kept like waking up and like looking into the corner and I was like freaking myself out and I could not sleep for the rest of the night. It fucking sucked.
I think that I could tell that case, I think, warned you a little bit.
Mm.
You know, I mean, I don't do the research on this, but it seems like sometimes like you're immersing your mind into one thing so much that probably, you know, wears on you.
Definitely. And like, that case, it obviously to me, I think it's just a fun case. Like it was like a fun little, you know, palate cleanser kind of spooky case that we did after we did the murder of Maddie Clifton. So I just thought it would be a lot of fun. But then like a couple nights later, I couldn't fucking sleep. I was like, oh my God, what did I do to myself? Why did I do that? But, you know, and I had said like in the beginning of that case, I was like, oh, I hope like, you know, maybe some of you will hate this and maybe some of you will, you know, can't sleep tonight. And I was the one that couldn't sleep. So it fucking backfired on me. So yeah, anyway, we don't really have much news for you today. Again, we have an announcement coming within the next couple of weeks. I'm still not really sure. So we will cross that bridge when we get to it. You will hear about it here and on social media. So today's case that we are talking about, we are going to be talking about Catherine Knight. Have you ever heard of her?
I have not.
She's also known as Australia's Hannibal.
Ooh.
You haven't heard about this at all?
I tried to do the Hannibal Lecter noise. It just sounded bad.
That face was really gross. Your upper lip completely disappeared. It was really, really fucking scary.
I feel
scary.
Like I just sound like a bong rip. It didn't really sound like
I'm really glad that we're just like noise in your ears and you couldn't see that face because it was gross.
Yeah. We could do a whole podcast about that face that I just made. Yeah, it was that disturbing.
It was disturbing. And I'm not going to be able to sleep tonight. I'm going to think that face is in the corner of my room. I'm going to wake up in the middle of the night. You're just going to be looking at me with that face.
Yeah, of course.
Oh, it's so
it's like when I do the Pennywise face.
No, I hate that face. Oh, it's so terrifying.
I found out I can do kind of the same thing the actor who plays the new
What's his name? Bill Skarsgård?
Bill Skarsgård. Because mm-hmm. if you watch this interview with them, that weird face he does with his like bottom lip, I can do that too. And then I just tried it and I could just do it. And I was actually at work at the time. I was a mechanic. And I was like, you know, that it chapter one just came out. I'm like, oh yeah, I can do that creepy face too. And I did it. I actually watched grown men just be like, oh God,
yeah,
don't do that.
It's so terrifying. I hate it so much, especially when you like start moving towards me. It scares the shit out of me. So I don't like it. And you're not allowed to do that in my house. So yeah, today we're going to be talking about Catherine Knight. So I'm sure a lot of you have heard this case before and are at least like a little bit familiar with it. But I actually delved deep and actually read an entire book for this one. This is going to be a two-parter because we're going to go really deep into a lot of Catherine's early life, like her childhood and her early working life and all that stuff and all of the relationships that she was in. She's a pretty terrible person, and you're going to find out why. So, trigger warning too at the beginning of this case, because this case involves the mental, physical, and sexual abuse of children, and this case also involves a heavy amount of domestic abuse, and we're going to go into a lot of detail about this domestic abuse. So, you ready to jump right in?
Buckle up.
All right. So, this starts 1949. Catherine's mother, Barbara, had been married to a man named Jack Ruffin. They were living in Aberdeen, New South Wales, Australia, which I see that we have a couple Australian listeners. I almost said wizards.
Maybe they are. Are you a wizard?
So, hello, Australian listeners. Thank you so much. I hope you're enjoying it. So, this is right in your home turf. So, New South Wales, Australia. Her husband worked in a slaughterhouse and had a liking for booze. They had been married since they were teenagers, and they had four sons. It was a very rough and unloving marriage. He was always out drinking, and she was left home to take care of the kids, etc. Barbara had had to pick up her drunk husband from the pub on many occasions, and this is where Barbara met one of Jack's co-workers, Ken Knight. They had immediate chemistry, and her and Ken flirted all night. Eventually, the two started having an affair. When her husband, Jack, found out about the affair, he beat her and kicked her out of the house. Oh. And her sons totally disowned her.
Wow.
So the same day that Barbara is kicked out of the house, she moves in with Ken Knight. And it didn't take long for the affair to be the talk of the town, because in the 1940s, that thing was not okay. I mean, it's still not okay, but
yeah.
People just talked and knew each other.
Yeah. And how fucked up is that? Her own kids went to the dad's side after all this? It's like...
I mean, she did have an affair.
But I don't... No, I mean, the guy's beating the shit out of their own mother.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
And then they're taking his side? They're like, oh my God. Sometimes I'm really... It's like I get frustrated with how things are sometimes these days, but those moments... I'm really glad I live... Now.
Yeah, exactly. It's a lot different nowadays. Okay. So not long after, the two packed up and moved to the town of Marie in New South Wales. I hope I'm saying that correctly. Ken quickly found work at the local slaughterhouse, and Barbara was quickly able to secure her divorce from Jack through the mail, which I didn't know was a thing. Ooh. Apparently you can do that. So within a week of the divorce, Ken and Barbara were married. Barbara became pregnant and had two more sons to replace the ones she'd lost due to her affair. Though Barbara had left her previous husband with the hopes of having a stable life of love and happiness, it was soon clear that her new marriage would be just as unhappy as the old one. Ken demanded sex from Barbara as often as 10 times a day.
Damn.
Even when Barbara refused, Ken would force himself upon her. Even the little boys, following their father's behavior, started becoming violent with their mother and siding with their father. So I don't know what's up with the little boys in this day and age over here in the 1940s, but yeah, they just went along with whatever dad did. But Barbara became pregnant again in 1955, and she was thrilled when she later gave birth to twin girls. So October 24th, 1955, Barbara gave birth to Catherine and Joy Knight. Barbara hoped that the girls would be allies to her against all the violent masculinity in the house. Growing up, Joy was more of a tomboy and sided with the boys. So Catherine became kind of Barbara's only hope against the rest of her family. So Catherine and the other children were abused by their father throughout childhood. When Catherine was old enough, around 4 years old, she began helping her mother run the household. She did the cooking, the cleaning, the sewing, and she began to be Barbara's confidant. Barbara would rant and complain to her constantly and even give her explicit sexual details and complain about how miserable her life was to a four-year-old.
Oh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So in 1959, Barbara's ex-husband, Jack Ruffin, died. The one she, you know, had the affair and left. So her two older sons from her previous marriage came to live with Barbara and the rest of her new family. The older boys quickly took after their new stepfather in viewing all women as sexual objects. They started sexually abusing girls their own age, and the boys were soon blacklisted from social events. And the girls in the community were told to stay away from the Ruffin boys. They were forced to stay away from all other females in town, and they turned to Catherine for their entertainment. From roughly the ages of 4 to 14, Catherine was abused by the older teenage boys. Eventually, the younger boys joined in. At one point, Catherine asked her mother, "What do you say if you don't want to do these things?" To which her mother replied, "Just let them do what they want to you. It's easier that way."
Oh, God, that's awful.
Great advice from your mother, huh?
Yeah.
Thanks to this bit of advice, Catherine never sought help by contacting the proper authorities. Which, it sounds like Barbara's mother was pretty fucked up to begin with, so it doesn't sound like she would really know what to say other than, yeah, just let it happen.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That's awful.
I know. So, Catherine did eventually find some peace in her uncle Oscar, who owned a horse farm. He taught her to care for animals, and Catherine finally had some positivity in her life for the first time ever. Sadly, in 1959, when Catherine was just 14 years old, her uncle Oscar committed suicide, leaving Catherine alone once again. This was the breaking point. Catherine began fighting back whenever her brothers tried abusing her. She fought hard, nearly breaking one brother's jaw at one point and stabbing another. And she's 14. Meanwhile, the family's reputation in town was spoiling. The rumors of the affair that had driven them out of Aberdeen had caught up to them in Moree, and the family yet again was forced out of town. They returned to Aberdeen in 1969. So they're just getting moved all over the place. In Aberdeen, Catherine attended a local high school. She was described as being a polite and cheerful 15-year-old until anyone tried to mess with her. Being the new kid, Catherine was often teased and bullied, but Catherine fought back. One girl tried to trip her while walking on the school bus, and the next day Catherine snuck up behind her and cut off her braid. Like, fuck yeah.
Damn.
Yeah, don't deal with bullies. And when another boy teased her, Catherine on the, when another boy teased Catherine on the bus, she smashed his teeth off the seat in front of him. So she just went like,
Don't fuck with Catherine.
Yeah, knocked his fucking teeth out. Yeah, I know. She was not taking crap from nobody. So when confronted by teachers, however, they had a hard time believing that Catherine was capable of these actions since she was such a nice young girl. And so there were never really any repercussions. Catherine even took it as far as stabbing a boy for, quote, talking back to her with a knife she had hidden in her skirt. Because of her excellent reputation with the teachers, even as the boy lay bleeding in the hall, Catherine received nothing more than a letter home to her parents. The staff never even searched her for the knife. When Catherine brought this letter home to her father, Ken, his only reaction was to ask his daughter if the boy had deserved the stabbing. Catherine answered yes. This was enough to satisfy her father. I could just see him, like, sitting on the couch drinking a beer. Well,
so her abusive father.
Yeah.
Is like, oh, yeah, just good job. So he's an idiot.
I picture him sitting in a recliner with a beer.
Yeah.
Like reading the newspaper. And he's got it like up to his face. And she comes up to him and gives him the letter. And he kind of glances at it. And he's like, well, did he deserve it? And she's like, yeah. And
so
he's
you're like, literally right, creating well done. A monster. So you're abusing your daughter. So you're obviously, yeah, I mean, you're obviously a piece of shit. And then you're encouraging her that if a guy hurts you or displeases you, stab them. Is he not making the connection that...
God. Yeah, yeah, I know. You're basically creating a serial killer.
Yeah.
But not really in this case, which you will find out. So later that school year, Catherine attacked her teacher with a knife when he gave her a bad grade. She was suspended for the attack, but was allowed to come back and finish the rest of the school year. When the school year was over, Catherine left school forever at just 15 years old. So it also sounds like, all of the adults in her life are kind of being like hoodwinked by her because she literally stabbed a boy. And he was, like, bleeding in the hallway. And they were just like, Catherine, what did you do? And she's like,
Gilly.
Oh, nothing. Like, I didn't do anything. And they were like, oh, okay. Yeah, you're so sweet.
That's so weird.
Isn't that fucked up?
It's really weird.
So because of these behaviors, Catherine was thought to have suffered from borderline personality disorder, which we'll kind of get into later when she's diagnosed. But I'm kind of putting this in near the beginning so you can kind of see the progression of this. So for anyone that doesn't know the definition or characteristics of borderline personality disorder, BPD is a mental disorder that impacts the way you think and feel about yourself and others, causing problems functioning in everyday life. It includes self-image issues, difficulty managing emotions and behavior, and a pattern of unstable relationships. Characteristics include fear of abandonment, unstable relationships, unclear or shifting self-image, impulsive, self-destructive behaviors, self-harm, extreme emotional swings, chronic feelings of emptiness, explosive anger, and feeling suspicious or out of touch with reality, which I feel like Catherine's kind of, you know, displaying a lot of those symptoms. Maybe they're not as severe yet because she's really young, but she's definitely like a boy teases her, so she fucking stabs him or something. It's unusual. It's really crazy, and most people would not do that. So Catherine most likely inherited this disorder from her mother, who showed some of the same symptoms. Catherine's upbringing exacerbated her symptoms, causing her to use the self-defense she had used on her sexual abusers on anyone who hurt her in the slightest. Catherine would use her disorder as an excuse for her actions throughout the rest of her life. So now we're going to fast forward a little bit. We're going to be talking a lot about Catherine's career and working life, because this will play a huge part in our story later on.
Okay.
So after leaving school, Catherine sought to work in the local slaughterhouse like her father. It was, quote, her dream job. And I think a lot of this town in this area, it seemed like everybody was pretty much either a slaughterhouse worker or a miner. So it was like one of those towns that was like built around these industries. And then everybody just, you either worked at one or the other. So Catherine's father worked in the slaughterhouse and she wanted to do that as well. So she was told, however, that that line of work was not for women and was turned away. She instead found a job working for a clothing manufacturing company. And since she had grown up making and mending clothes for herself and her family, she excelled at the job. She was given a higher wage and was able to move herself into a small apartment near the factory. For the first time ever, Catherine was free from her family's grasp. Soon she found herself regularly heading down to the local pub with the slaughterhouse workers. She quickly developed a reputation as being a tough, loudmouthed girl who could keep up with the boys. This reputation gained her respect from the supervisor of the slaughterhouse, and in 1971, when Catherine was just 17 years old, she finally landed her job at the local slaughterhouse with her father. So in the slaughterhouse, you hear me? In the slaughterhouse, Catherine thrived. In the span of a year, she was able to work her way through all of the jobs in the slaughterhouse, finally getting to work alongside her father. In the first year that she was there, production in the slaughterhouse went through the roof due to the men not wanting to be less efficient than a woman. And I made a little note, fragile masculinity.
Yeah.
Way to go, guys. So Catherine's success did not go unnoticed by the owners of the slaughterhouse. They didn't want to do anything as drastic as give her a pay raise.
Oh, of course not.
Of course not, because she's a woman. Instead, they gave her a set of personalized knives in a leather carrying bag. These knives became Catherine's most prized possessions.
The world is just wants her to be a serial killer.
Yeah, literally. They're just like, here, we're not going to give you any extra money, but we're just going to give you this big, nice bag of knives. You hang on to that, sweetie. Yeah, you take that.
With the knowledge of slaughtering cattle.
And at one point, like, they're literally her prized possessions. And at one point, she literally, like, hangs them above her bed. Like, it's this, like, decoration, like, beautiful thing that she worships. Like, these fucking knives. It's crazy. So, yeah, they became her most prized possessions. She was now basically obsessed with her job, to the point of hanging out at the slaughterhouse, even on her days off. She developed a special liking for the pig room, where an old man spent his days slaughtering pigs. Catherine liked to watch the man kill the pigs. He liked her company, so he started killing pigs in more cruel and creative ways. He once skinned an entire pig alive for her entertainment. I know, and just the thought of that is so gross. Ew. Catherine started participating in killing the pigs. At first, she would just kill them in the normal way of slicing open their throats. When she got bored of that, she progressed to chasing them around and slashing at them with a knife until they were finally dead.
That's awful.
And remember, as a kid, her uncle Oscar taught her to save and care for animals. So why the fuck is she doing this now? It's very, really weird how she flips, because that was only a couple years before. Remember, she was like 14 when her uncle died. Now she's 17. That was only 3 years.
I think also people just had a different view of animals in general back then. I mean, even like my grandparents and stuff, it's like they're very utilitarian.
Was like one part too that I didn't include in here, but like there was one part too where they talked about like when Catherine would get bored, she would just get in her car and drive around town and run over cats and dogs.
Oh, God.
Yeah, like that's on purpose. That's not normal. Okay. Yeah. So this behavior actually freaked out a lot of her coworkers, and it gave them further reason not to mess with her. Mm. They're all afraid of, like, the one woman in the fucking slaughterhouse, which yeah. I would be too, I guess, you know?
Yeah, I would be.
Like, that bitch, like, she's scary. So,
yeah.
So Catherine was a regular at the local pub where she would flirt with her fellow slaughterhouse workers. She was highly respected amongst the men for her ability to keep up with them in their after-work endeavors. Fun fact, Catherine did not drink alcohol. The bartender would simply serve her lemonade while the men around her became more and more drunk. Catherine used this to her advantage to try to take men home with her.
Hmm.
Yeah, she's fucking crazy. Like, I don't know. That's crazy. So a man named David Collette took a special interest in Catherine. One night while hanging out, a few local miners came to the pub, which was unusual since they typically frequented their own union house and never really mixed with the slaughterhouse workers. One miner took a particular dislike in David Collette and walked up to him and insulted David to his face. Instead of escalating the situation, David backed down. Catherine then stepped in and beat the ever-loving shit out of this guy to the point where several slaughterhouse men had to pull her off him before she killed him. After this, Catherine was banned from the pub.
She wasn't even drunk.
No, she was totally sober. Dead sober. Damn. Which, in a way, I guess if everybody else was drunk and she, like, beat up a dude, like, she'd have the advantage. But she's also, like, this huge woman that, like, works in a fucking slaughterhouse.
Was she a big
she's,
girl?
Like, jacked. Yeah, she's yeah. tall and she's, like, jacked. And she's young.
Mm.
So David was deeply moved by the fact that a woman had stood up for him. Yeah. After this incident, Catherine and David began a romantic relationship and quickly moved in together. Just after Catherine's 18th birthday, the two were married. Before the ceremony on the day of the wedding, David got drunk at the local pub while Catherine waited outside in her handmade wedding dress. When he was finished, he and Catherine rode to the ceremony on his motorbike. David was so drunk, he could hardly get through the ceremony, but Catherine was beyond excited for their wedding day, and she didn't really seem to mind. Later, Catherine led David away from the celebrations to consummate their new union. This is really fucked up. So the two had sex three times in quick succession. After the third time, David fell asleep, snoring loudly, because he's shit-faced.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so he fell asleep. Catherine was fucking pissed, so she begins beating the shit out of her new husband while he's drunk and asleep. So he's super drunk and he's pretty unconscious. When he doesn't respond to her beatings, she climbs on top of him and begins choking him with her bare hands. That's normal.
Jesus. Right?
Yeah, that's a good way to wake someone up.
Because he fell asleep?
Because he fell asleep.
After banging her three times? Mm-hmm.
No, it gets worse, ready? Somehow, David woke up during the throttling and was able to run away into the hall. He notices the bruises and scratches all over his body, and he's like, what the fuck? So Catherine responds by saying when her parents got married, they had sex five times on their wedding night, and that if David loved her, he should have sex with her at least that many times.
Jesus.
So I don't think, like, the fucked up part is being, like, you have to have sex with me five times. The fucked up part to me is, or the more fucked up part to me is that she's like, well, my parents had sex five times on their wedding night, so you have to have sex with me at least five times. It's like, ew, why are you comparing our wedding night to your fucking parents?
And you're also beating the crap out of the guy because of it.
Yeah.
That's so
It's dumb. So gross and horrible. Yeah,
that's grody.
Just fucked up, right? So, did you say grody?
Yeah.
What? Why?
I don't know. It was grody. What does that mean? Like, I don't know.
I feel like that's like a mid-2000s word.
I'm 31 years old.
Oh, yeah. That's a stupid word. So anyway, so obviously David thinks that this is extremely shocking and gross to hear about on their own wedding. Like, if you came to me and said that, I'd be like, oh my God, never talk to me again. That's so gross. Like, that's like the most unattractive thing you could fucking say to me.
Yeah.
So he says he'll come back to bed in a minute, but he needs to use the bathroom first. The bathroom was the only room in the house with a lock. So David goes in there, locks the door, and falls asleep in the tub where Catherine can't get him. And she's, like, banging on the door.
He was really,
like,
tired, huh?
Yeah, he was. Well, he was shit-faced. He was drinking all day, had his wedding.
But you feel, yeah, you're shit-faced, then you go to bed, then you get the crap beaten out of you, then you wake up, and this first thing is, oh, I need another nap. Like, I'd be like...
Well, no, it's, like, nighttime at this point.
Yeah, but, oh, gee, I don't know.
He was shit-faced. She woke him up, and now he's like, I just want to go back to bed.
Okay, I feel like if I was shit-faced, and then... Like, I banged three times, And then I fell asleep. And then I woke up to someone beating the crap out of me. I feel like I'd sober up pretty quick.
I mean, maybe, but he just wanted to get the fuck away from her. I mean, who knows if he fell asleep right away. He could have, like, you know, like, gone in there and fallen asleep, like, a few minutes, like, a little while later. But either way, he went and slept in the bathtub and locked the door, and she was banging on the door all night, I guess. So, yeah, she's fucking crazy. So, after this incident, Catherine and David's marriage seemed overall pretty normal and happy. The two each worked full-time jobs. Catherine was still working in the slaughterhouse, and David was working as a truck driver. Catherine was trying desperately to be the best wife she could possibly be to David. On top of working, Catherine took care of David and their home single-handedly, doing all of the cooking, cleaning, sewing, etc. This honeymoon phase lasted for several months until Catherine began to buckle under the strain of all of her responsibilities. She did not immediately resort to violence, but instead began to berate David for very small things, such as coming home from work even a few minutes later than he was expected. Catherine began to suspect these extra minutes away from home were because her husband was not being faithful. Yeah, well, you know, she's basically like...
Well, that's just insulting to him.
Yeah, and I know she's kind of a crazy person, but it's like I could see somebody getting in their own head of like the monotony of like you're just like working yourself to the fucking bone where you're like working a full-time job mm-hmm. and then you're like taking care of the house, you're doing all like the shopping, all the cooking and everything, and like you're not really having any like time to yourself.
Yeah.
I could see somebody like getting in their own head and then starting to like make shit up because they're miserable, you know, yeah. and bored.
And you said that she's got borderline personality disorder, which... You're saying it's like they have trouble regulating emotion and things like that.
Exactly,
and they're yeah. paranoid and they can be paranoid and things like that. So.
Exactly. And just like, you know, like obsessively thinking about things and then just coming to a conclusion in your mind and mm-hmm. then blowing up. So eventually, because of this, Catherine forced her husband to quit his truck driving job and take a job in the slaughterhouse where he made significantly less money but could be supervised by Catherine all day long. Yeah, that sucks. That's, yeah, seriously. David, well, I mean, I'm not trying to insult anybody when I say this, but he was initially impressed by her because she stood up for him by beating the shit out of another man.
Hmm. Maybe so, he likes that. Maybe he's kind of a
sub. Hey, he could. Yeah, totally. Yeah. And he's just a very, like, submissive person, like, totally B-type where she's A-type and
maybe it's just his kink, you know?
I think I'm leaning more towards he's like a B-type, like easygoing guy, and like he's just easily manipulated. You know what I mean? So I could kind of see, and I think he's kind of young, so I could see that kind of being a thing. So David started retreating to the pub after work before going home. Catherine continued to work and take care of David and the home, and her obsessive rages still continued, but that just became the way of life, and they were both kind of okay with it.
Hmm. No, thanks.
I know. But I, you know, people get roped into all kinds of shit. You know, there's so many stories of people being like abused, whether mentally, physically, whatever. And then they just don't do anything about it. They're just kind of stuck in their way of life, like possibly hoping it'll get better. And they're just dealing with it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Especially too. And I think I made this note later. This was the, what was the, what did I say? Like the 1960s, 50s, something like that. So this was obviously like in the middle of last century. So there was much less, you know, it was very much like, oh, you're a man, toughen up and deal with it, that kind of thing. And it's like men wouldn't go to their friends or coworkers and complain to them about their problems or cry to them about things. Like
especially
it was just very
at that
much
time if your wife was,
that's what I'm saying. Yeah. And we'll kind of get into that later, but it's just kind of like he's just kind of dealing with it because what's he going to do? Like, the men at work are going to think he's, like, some kind of pussy for, oh, you can't deal with your wife.
Also,
like,
Australian band, Men at Work.
What?
He said,
oh, Men at Work.
Because they're in Australia. Like, he said Men at Work. My brain was like, oh, like the band from Australia.
I didn't know they were from Australia.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Aren't they? They're the, I come from the land down under.
I don't really listen to that band. So that's the only song I know by Men at Work, I think.
Great band.
Yeah. So, and so is AC/DC. They were all from Australia, weren't they?
Yeah. Australia puts out some good goddamn music.
Mm-hmm. Fuck yeah. Go Australia. So I just lost my place. Let me get back to where I was. Oh, the Chats.
I love the Chats.
Mm.
Amy Smoko. And the Sniffers. Mm-hmm. You guys have been putting... I just want to interlude here. Palate cleanser. The Australians...
We haven't even gotten that bad yet. We don't even need a palate cleanser yet.
I just want to say the Australians put out great rock and roll. Always have. And mm-hmm. probably always will.
Mm-hmm. All right. So anyway, moving on. Thank you, moving Australia. On. So yeah, they were both kind of okay with this way of life until August of 1975. Okay. So we're in the 70s. Catherine discovered she was pregnant with the couple's first child. In case you are wondering, this did nothing to help with Catherine's jealous rages towards her husband. If anything, this made it worse. So now she's not just worried about her husband leaving her for another loose woman in town. I don't know why I wrote loose woman, but who knows? Anyway, leaving her for another loose woman in town. She's worried about her husband leaving her with a baby that she wasn't even sure she wanted. That's pretty... That kind of sucks. So she was even more obsessively watching David's every move for anything suspicious. One night, David came home from work to change his shirt before heading out to the pub, which was something he never did. Catherine lost her shit. She was accusing him of cheating on her because she's like, why the fuck are you coming home and changing your shirt? You never do that. You just go out right after work. Why are you changing your shirt? Who are you trying to impress? Like that kind of thing, you know, which I guess that is kind of suspicious. But maybe he had something really gross on his shirt and he just didn't feel like smelling it all night. So she loses her shit. And after David left for the pub, Catherine gathered up all of his clothes, threw them in the bathtub and lit them on fire.
Damn.
Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, so the freaking fire department's called and then David comes home and like half his house is fucking burned down. And most of his clothes. So a few weeks later, David returned home from the pub to yet another stream of accusations. His wife had been ironing what few remaining shirts he had, and in her rage, she hit him across the face with a scalding hot iron, burning him almost down to his cheekbone.
Oh, God.
And that he had a scar from that remained for like the rest of his life.
Yeah.
Yeah, a big ass scar. So screaming in pain, David retreated for the bathroom and locked himself inside. Catherine stood outside sobbing and apologizing until David finally let her in. Catherine then cleaned and wrapped the wound and the two went to bed together.
This guy's a fucking idiot.
Well, like I said, again, it was the 1970s. Like, what are you supposed to do? And again, it's a small town. We already know that like an affair was like the talk of the fucking town.
Yeah.
Now you have this guy whose wife is beating the shit out of him. Mm-hmm. What is he supposed to do? Because he's going to end up getting driven out of town, you know? So he's kind of losing both ways. Like if he like goes to get help, everyone's going to be like, oh, what a pussy. You can just deal with his wife. And on the other hand, he's getting the shit beaten out of him by his wife. So it's like, really, what is he supposed to do?
Yeah.
And you will find out what he does. So David should have called the paramedics due to the severity of his burn. Because like I said, he was burned almost all the way down to his cheekbone. Mm-hmm. But fearing that his wife would be in trouble, because if you call the ambulance, the police get involved, he decided to try to go to sleep that night instead of going to the hospital. When he arrived at work the next day, however, he was driven to the hospital by a coworker where he was treated for his severe burns. This scar would remain a prominent feature for the rest of his life. Jeez. So for a time after this event, David began communicating daily the exact times that he would be in and out of the house to avoid another violent outburst from his wife. This worked for a little while, until unfortunately one night, David lingered just a moment too long at the pub. Catherine was at home awaiting her husband's arrival. When he was a minute late, she began to get anxious. When he was 2 minutes late, she began to get angry. And when he was 3 minutes late, she suspected that her husband had finally left her for another woman while she was holed up at home alone and very pregnant. She began to make her plans for revenge. 3 minutes. 3 minutes late.
God.
4 minutes after he was expected home, David walked into the house to find all the lights out. He gave a sigh of relief, assuming that his wife had simply gone to bed early. Hoping that he could finally have a quiet night to himself at home, David made his way through the kitchen door. That was the last thing he remembered until he woke up outside, flat on his back, underneath the stars. So you may be thinking, David went into the kitchen, had a couple drinks, had the time of his life, and woke up outside.
Mm-hmm.
Wandered out into the grass, fell asleep. Well, that's dead wrong. So David woke up outside and he was feeling very disoriented and he was somehow able to crawl over to a neighbor's house and knock on their door and they called for help. David was rushed to the hospital where he was treated for a severe skull fracture in the back of his head. So what happened?
She was waiting in the darkness.
Oh, yeah. Catherine had ambushed him in their kitchen and had hit him in the back of the head with a cast iron frying pan with every ounce of her strength.
Fuck.
Yeah. And remember, she's like a big jacked woman. So like a big jacked woman with like a 12 inch fucking cast iron pan, just like swinging it like a fucking baseball bat. Yeah. He's lucky he didn't die for being 4 minutes late.
Oh, God. Yeah.
4 minutes late. Yeah. This is what this woman does. So in the end, David ended up telling the police that he had come home much later from the bar than he actually did, and that Catherine must have thought that he was an intruder, and her being pregnant and alone acted out of panic and attacked the intruder. Catherine corroborated this story. So David obviously made that up.
Yeah. That's the saddest thing about people who are in abusive relationships is they'll just lie and make things up to...
Well, yes.
It's very sad.
Yeah, and we're going to kind of get into... these are a few possible scenarios why David covered up for his wife. So one is that despite their history, David was very much in love with Catherine and chose to think that these events may have changed her for the better. There are plenty of people who act out irrationally, learn from their mistakes, and are reformed from them. So it's like a bit of wishful thinking, you know?
Yeah.
Second, it is possible that he was afraid of what his wife might do to him if he told the truth about what she had done. She sat by his bedside while he was weak and vulnerable in the hospital, and there was no telling what she might do to him. So he could, like, tell the police, and then she could, like, smother him or something crazy, you know what I mean? Lastly, like I said, this story takes place in the mid-1970s Australia. Men were supposed to be powerfully dominant and women subservient. Did I say that right?
Yeah.
Subservient?
Okay. Subservient.
Subservient. It would be a huge blow to David's ego and reputation if it were discovered by the community that he were being abused by his wife.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, again. So, those are the possible reasons why he made that up. So, after staying a while in the hospital, David was finally able to return home where he was lovingly being tended to hand and foot by his wife. When David was well again, he returned to work, allowing Catherine to finally stay home while she waited out the last weeks of her pregnancy. For a short time, Catherine actually seemed to have returned to being a normal, loving wife. This behavior would lure David into a false sense of security. This led to David giving Catherine attitude one night when he returned home late from a darts tournament at the pub. David, stop going to the pub. It caused nothing but problems. Or stay at the pub. Just don't go home.
Yeah, I would say I recommend stay at the pub. Move into the pub.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just live behind the bar. It's fine.
I wonder if David was like Norm from Cheers. But every time
I've never watched Cheers.
Every time he walked in, he was just all fucked up looking.
I don't know. I mean, I kind of picture himself like pulling it together as best he can, and like whatever injuries are happening to him, he's probably just making excuses, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
But I feel like people deep down definitely know what's going on.
Yeah.
Because remember, a lot of these people work with her.
Yeah.
Like when he's going to the pub, it's like all slaughterhouse workers. So it's like he's coming in with all these injuries. He's married to this fucking beast of a woman that like cuts up pigs and kills them slowly and skins them alive and like whatever. Mm-hmm. And he's coming in with all these injuries and he's probably like, oh, I just fell off a ladder or something like that. And they're like, I don't think you did.
Yeah.
So he returned late one night from our darts tournament and gave her some lip. So the very pregnant wife had taken up her frying pan again and attempted to beat David with it, but David managed to escape mostly uninjured. He left to stay the night with a friend from the pub, so he's finally out of there for at least one night.
Back to the pub.
Well, no, he stayed with a friend from the pub. So David returned to work at the slaughterhouse the next day, fully expecting his wife to visit him at work and finish what she had started the night before. But she never came. It was this day that David decided he was going to leave his wife. He had actually been thinking of leaving her for a while now, for her suspicions had been true.
Ooh.
David had been having an affair with another woman since before the incident with the clothes iron. So he had a guma.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, still,
And I didn't include this in here, but there was a little thing about how you know, remember when Catherine was like working, cleaning, cooking, she's like doing all this shit. Well, she started, because she was trying to do so much for her husband, apparently he was getting less and less and less attention from her, and mm-hmm. she was just like fighting with him and stuff like that. So it actually like pushed him away, and then he started having an affair.
Yeah.
So that's what happened. So
yeah, this girl does not sound like, she does not sound like a picnic.
No, and she gets much worse. So you will see. So David had actually managed to get this woman pregnant too. And she wanted him to leave Catherine and come live with her. David knew after the incident the night before that he needed to escape, and now was his chance. When David returned home that day, where Catherine apologized for the incident from the night before and promised she would be better to David. For the next few weeks, David tread carefully around his wife until finally in May of 1976, David got his chance to escape when Catherine went into labor. As her parents drove her to the hospital, David packed up his remaining possessions, went down to the slaughterhouse to hand in his notice, and left town for good. Hmm. So she's like on her way to the hospital to have his baby, and he fucking dipped. But, you know, she's getting worse and worse. You know what I mean? So he's like, I just got to take my fucking chances and go. Yeah. You know, it's like, I totally get it. It's a shame he's
leaving his son with that.
Exactly. But it's kind of just like, at that point, he's like, I don't know what she's going to do. Like, any minute now, she could just
murder,
He was literally 4 minutes late home from the bar, and she beat the shit out of him with a fucking cast iron pan to the point where he had, like, a skull fracture and had to go to the fucking hospital.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy. So, in May of 1976, Catherine gave birth to her first child, Melissa Ann. Just after the birth of her baby girl, while still in the hospital, Catherine learned that her husband had skipped town and abandoned his family. This information sent Catherine into a deep and violent depression. After a few days in the hospital, Catherine and Melissa were sent home, where they were trapped in the house with no company but each other. Catherine began to resent her baby, for she reminded her of David. Neighbors would peer out of their windows as Catherine walked by with Melissa in a stroller, screaming into the infant's face while the child screamed back. Jesus. Yeah, this is a baby that's like a couple weeks old. Yeah. She could also be seen running wildly with her baby up and down the sidewalks, not caring that the helpless child was being thrown around in her carriage.
My God.
Yeah, she's literally just like fucking all over the place with this kid, and the kid's just like rolling around like screaming. And I know, it sucks. And it was like, I assume it was one of those carriages that's a lot different than nowadays, where your baby's like very strapped in. It's probably just like, you know, laid down in this thing. So it's like rolling all over the place. Yeah, it's fucked up. So this eventually led Catherine to be delicately apprehended by police. For those who policed the town also lived in it and knew Catherine's violent reputation. The baby was sent to live with Catherine's parents, and Catherine was sent to the local mental institution. Mm-hmm. Finally. This is where she was diagnosed with borderline personality disorder and thought to have a very intense case of postpartum depression, which I don't think is true. Because, I don't think I included this in here, but she was pretty, like, pumped about her baby, like, when the baby was born. And then as soon as she found out David had abandoned them, she, like, fucking, basically it was like Patrick's face in that episode of SpongeBob where SpongeBob... It's Valentine's Day and Sandy fucks up his present or whatever. Yeah. And like he gives Patrick a handshake and Patrick, his whole face just like droops for the entire episode.
And then he just loses his shit.
Yeah. That's basically exactly what happened.
I mean, there's a lot of stuff at work here. I mean, her childhood, everything. I mean, she's literally a ticking time bomb.
Oh yeah. And it gets much, much worse.
I feel like pretty textbook, like potential to be a serial killer. Like textbook.
Mm-hmm, for sure. So doctors also concluded that Catherine's possessed I don't know how to say this word, so I'm sorry, but it's a primeval. Very literal. Okay, primeval intelligence, which basically means she operated like a caveman and not like a woman living in, for the time, modern society. She was basically a fucking caveman. So despite these conclusions, eventually she was released and was free to return home with her baby, where the pair would once again be alone together. Neighbors reported that the house was mostly quiet, except for the occasional sounds of a crying baby. So, pretty normal. Mm-hmm. But one day, the cries ceased completely. And on one afternoon, a local homeless man was walking on some railroad tracks in the town, looking for wild mushrooms, when he heard the sounds of a baby crying. A little way down the tracks, the man found a baby, who happened to be Melissa, laying across the railroad tracks and wailing. There was no one else in sight. The man grabbed the baby off the tracks just before a train approached, saving her from certain death.
Oh my God.
Yeah, there was literally a train fucking coming when this guy like found her. Yeah. The man brought the small child back to the back to town where it was discovered to be Catherine Knight's daughter. Catherine was sent back to the mental institution for this incident, and when she was released, Melissa was not immediately returned to her and instead went to live with Catherine's parents. Catherine returned home alone. A few days after returning home, a next-door neighbor received a frantic knock on the door. The neighbor was a 16-year-old girl, home alone babysitting her younger brother. When she answered the door, she saw Catherine standing outside crying. Catherine convinced the teenager that the baby was in, that her baby was in danger and that she needed a ride to go and save her. The teenage girl agreed to take Catherine, but once in the car, Catherine threatened her at knife point and told her to take her to David's mother's house in Queensland so that she could finally murder David for abandoning her.
Damn.
Yeah, she's still obsessed with David. So when they stopped for gas along the way, the teenager ran inside the gas station where she called for help, and the police managed to apprehend Catherine. And again, I didn't include this in here, but like, when there was like already like cops there or something like that, like inside the gas station, and this teenager had her little brother in the backseat. I think he was like a toddler or something. And Catherine had ripped him out of the car and was like holding a knife to his throat and was like, get in the fucking car and take me to go kill David right now, or I'm going to kill your fucking brother. And like the summer, it took like a bunch of cops to like get her off of him. Oh, it was fucking crazy. Yeah. She's like insane. So this time she was taken to a more strict mental institution. About fucking time. So here in talk therapy, Catherine told doctors of her desire to track down and kill the husband that had abandoned her. The institution then contacted David in Queensland and informed him of the danger that he was in. David's a fucking idiot at this point, because what happened was this news shocked and upset David, and he immediately blamed himself for the state that Catherine was in. Rather than continuing to hide away from his clearly very mentally ill wife, David left his pregnant lover and returned to Aberdeen with his mother.
Aberdeen in the 70s is a very silly place.
Yeah.
I guess, oh my God. Like,
Jesus. A lot of silly people in that town. Like, so David was able. So this is, he literally had left Catherine to live with this other woman that he had gotten pregnant. And when he heard about her going fucking nuts and being in the mental institution for the third time, he decided to return and come back instead of being like, oh God, like she's terrifying, I'm going to leave forever. So David was able to return to his old job at the slaughterhouse and filed to have Catherine released into his care.
Oh my God.
On August 9th of 1976, Catherine Knight was released from the mental institution and went to live with David and his mother in a small apartment near the meatworks. Shortly after, the couple received Melissa from Catherine's parents, and a short while later, the family relocated to a small suburb of Brisbane. David's mother, who relocated along with the family, primarily took care of the baby, leaving Catherine free to land a job in the local slaughterhouse. She's back at it again, baby. Mm-hmm. Everything seemed perfect. She had her husband back. She had help with the baby and help around the house and a job doing what she loved. She was miserable, of course, because she's fucking crazy. So in March of 1980, Catherine gave birth to the couple's second child, Natasha Marie. This time around, David had stayed with Catherine all through her labor. Catherine was happy to finally have the chance to start over with a new baby and become the caring wife and mother she had always wanted to be. This phase quickly faded, and David's mother took over caring for both of the children most of the time. Catherine returned to work, and the monotony continued. Eventually, Catherine got so bored with her life that one day she just packed up the children and moved back to Aberdeen to live with her parents. Hmm. So she abandoned David the same way that he had abandoned her and took the kids. Yeah. The couple divorced, and Catherine went back to her old job at the Aberdeen Meatworks as if nothing had changed. One day, Catherine sustained a back injury at work that forced her to leave her job and file for workers' compensation. Catherine was once again left alone at home to care for her children. After some time, Catherine began leaving her children at home alone so she could return to the local bars and possibly meet another man.
Hmm.
Guess who she met at the bar?
Who?
Another David. So she meets David Saunders, a local miner. So she now she has a new David. Ooh, I hit my microphone. I'm sorry. swinging my arms around like an angry Italian woman.
You are an angry Italian woman.
This is true. So the two of them hit it off, and within a month, Saunders moved in to live with Catherine and her children. At first, things were very much how they were with Catherine's last relationship. She would do all the cooking and cleaning and take care of the new David and the children. Eventually, however, Catherine began to grow suspicious of her new David and would often accuse him of infidelity whenever he worked late or went out to get a drink from the pub. One night, new David, I keep calling him new David. So that's fine. No confusion.
You can call him new David.
That's fine. So there's no confusion. So new David came home from work to find Catherine in a foul mood. When he tried to talk to her about what was bothering her, Catherine stormed out of the back door, seized the family dog around the neck, lifted it up off the ground, and slit his throat with a butcher knife.
Jesus.
Catherine told David if she ever found him cheating on her, that's exactly what she would do to him.
A dog? Jeez.
Well, imagine if, yeah, the dog. I mean, that's horrible, but imagine if someone fucking did that in front of you. They were like, this is going to be you if you fuck up, kid.
I don't believe in hitting women. But
I think she needs more than a slap. She needs to be like taken down by the fucking military.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
she needs to be nuked. She's fucking crazy. And it gets worse. Like
she needs to be put down.
It gets so much worse. So David pleaded that he was loyal to her and that he would never cheat on her, but Catherine was not convinced. She picked up the nearest frying pan and her favorite weapon and proceeded to beat the shit out of him, breaking some of the bones in his arm. Eventually, Catherine's rage subsided and the two made up. Shortly after, Catherine discovered she was pregnant with her third child and the couple bought a house for their family to live in. Somebody needs to stop getting this bitch pregnant also, by the way.
If I watched a grown person slit a dog's throat in front of me, I just don't get how you could just be like, oh, well, she was just angry.
Yeah, she does that sometimes.
There's a lot more going on than just she's annoyed or she's a little jealous or paranoid about something. I mean, that's
and she's definitely like hoodwinking these men somehow into like roping them into some kind of relationship with her and then just being an absolute psycho. And then the men for some reason don't leave. It's very weird.
It is weird.
So in June of 1988, Catherine gave birth to her third daughter.
Her third daughter.
I sound like, what's his name, Mark? That guy from, he sounds like Dunkin' Donuts.
Coffee.
Oh my God. He owns a burger place. Mark, from The Fighter. Remember?
Mark Wahlberg?
Yeah, Mark Wahlberg. Wow. Daughter. Holy shit.
Well, we are New Englanders.
Yeah, we are New Englanders. I couldn't even remember Mark Wahlberg's name though. So yeah, her daughter, Sarah. Her new daughter's name is Sarah. So this, once again, set Catherine into a downward spiral of depression that David was not expecting. Eventually, after an incident that involved Catherine stabbing David in the stomach with a pair of kitchen shears, David was forced to leave his family in order to save his own life. And there was like one thing where he like tried to go back and like get the daughter, like Sarah. He was trying to go back and save her so that she didn't have to live with fucking Catherine. And like he like pulled into town and the police like pulled him over and arrested him because she had filed some kind of like it was a certain kind of restraining order, but it's like a restraining order times like 100 where like they're it's some kind of like if you're like violent towards somebody, it's like a really more intense like restraining order. She had like somehow filed this on him and then they like arrested him. They were like, yeah, you can either go to jail or leave town. So he just had to leave.
Damn.
Yeah. And he never got his baby.
It's awful.
So after these events, Catherine returned to her nightly prowling of the local pub, leaving all her fucking kids at home. And it's here where she reconnected with a man she had met there in her early teens or her mid teens. She was like 15. And it was a man named John Chillingworth.
I like that name.
Chillingworth. It sounds like a penis butler.
Yeah.
Buttle my penis.
Does a little bit.
Chillingworth.
Yes.
Buttle my penis. Anyway, Chillingworth was 10 years her senior and an alcoholic. Sounds like a catch. But the two hit it off. The two began dating for a while, and it was not long before the story basically repeats itself. And at the end of 1990, she gave birth to yet another child, her first and only son, Eric. So now she has four kids.
This is starting to get a little repetitive.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, and we're going to kind of...
Does she do anything else other than...
other than get pregnant and beat the shit out of her husband? Yeah. She absolutely does. But this is all very... it's going to just slowly get worse until it finally...
How can it get worse?
It kind of slowly gets worse, and then it kind of plateaus for a while, and then it just fucking blasts off into space with craziness. So you will see what happens. Yeah, it's pretty crazy. All right. So they began dating, blah, blah, blah. They had a baby. Once again, after the birth of her fourth and final child, Catherine fell into a depression, blah, 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 and began accusing John of cheating on her and beating the shit out of him. So what Catherine did with this guy, though, she learned the ins and outs of John's schedule so she knew when he would be at work, when he would be at the pub, and when he would be home. This guy kind of took a lot less shit than the other guys, so he was kind of like, oh, you can't tell me what to do, but, like, instead she, like, learned his schedule anyway, so, like, to kind of get back at him, she did this. One night, John returned home from the pub and knew his girlfriend would be expecting him. When he entered the bedroom, he discovered Catherine in bed with another man. She had deliberately forced John to watch her in the act of cheating on him in order to extract revenge on the man that she accused of being disloyal to her.
That's weirdly not the worst thing she's done so far.
No, it's really not.
Like, that's just fucked up.
I think this guy, like, from what I was reading, like, he wasn't really receptive of, like, the type of, like, fuckery that she tried to do with the other two Davids, which, you know, first David, she, like, beat the shit out of him with, like, a frying pan and a fucking iron. But before that, she had, like, verbally abused him for so long until she, like, pushed him to this point and then began beating the shit out of him. Same thing with the last David. Now you get this guy that's kind of like, well, you're not going to tell me what to do. And she's like, okay, well, fuck you.
Yeah.
But it is, like, definitely he's not as bad. He's very chill. John Chillingworth left Catherine that night and never returned. Catherine soon after began a tumultuous relationship with the man whom she'd been cheating on Chillingworth. This man's name was John Price, another John.
Wow.
And unbeknownst
to Davids, two Johns.
Uh-huh. And unbeknownst to John Price, he would be the unluckiest man to ever grace the presence of Catherine Knight. Mm. And just when it's getting good, we're going to stop there.
Oh.
Yeah, so you gotta wait till next week.
Part two next week.
Oh, yeah, and it's fucking wild. So that had to be kind of a long one. I know it was, like, kind of repetitive, but it's, like, really, I just really wanted to go into, like, a lot of, like, what she was doing, because it just is so rare for women to act like that. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's usually, like, men that have this, like, history of violence and like, repetitive, like violent sexual behavior and, like, all this stuff. It's almost never women that do stuff like that. Like, we're to the point where she would, like, mentally fuck with them, like, psychologically fuck with them, and then literally beat the shit out of them and send them to the hospital multiple times, you know?
They've come a long way with borderline. I don't know anything about this case, but I do know a little bit about BPD. And they've come a long way with treating that, but I've heard stories of particularly women acting, not as violent, but acting in a really similar way that she's acting. The paranoia, the manipulation, the violence. So,
yeah.
It's just, but like I said, I think it's a perfect, like, any other serial killer, there's potentially, you know, we haven't gotten there yet, but, you know, there's sort of this perfect storm.
And yeah, for sure. And it's just, it's crazy because, again, like, and the reason I wanted to go into such detail is because it's just so horrific that, like, people, I mean, nowadays, obviously, it still happens, but I like to think maybe it happens less because there's so many resources out there for both men and women or whoever to get the help that they need. And they can also do it kind of discreetly and anonymously, like, get the help that they need. Whereas, like, back then, it's like, you don't have the internet, like, you don't have cell phones, you don't have, like, what are you supposed to do? Like, go to your neighbor? Or, like, even if you go to the police, like, what can they even really do? Like, she's a woman, and the police are also fucking afraid of her. Like, they have, like, a fucking whole squad come and arrest her. Like, it's crazy. Yeah. Like, they have to, like, wrestle her and shit. It's nuts.
Yeah.
So it's just, I don't know, it's just absolutely crazy to me. And it gets really, really nuts. I wanted to, like, purposely just go into, like, a lot of what leads up to this actual incident in this episode and kind of leave you with a little cliffhanger for next week. What did you think so far of this story?
I want to hear what happens next. I'm looking forward to it because, man.
I'm going to tell you right now, it is the second half of this story is nothing like you've ever heard of.
Cool. I'm excited.
Yeah.
It's and I hope everyone good. Listening is too.
Yeah. I mean, it was a cool one. So,
yeah,
that was part one of Catherine Knight, Australia's Hannibal. So we will be back next week with part two. I hope you guys really liked that. I hope you liked the detail and all that cool stuff, because she was fucking crazy. And I feel like the whole entire story needs to be told.
Yes.
So, yeah, definitely come back next Monday for the rest of this super crazy story. So in the meantime, you can follow us on social media, Instagram at creepyourheartout_pod, Twitter at creepyho_pod. And if there are any cases that you want to send us, or if you have any of your own stories you would like read on the podcast, you can email us at creepyourheartoutpod@gmail.com. And lastly, if you are listening to us on Apple Podcasts or another streaming service that lets you leave a review, please do us a favor and leave us a 5-star rating and a positive review. This helps spread awareness of the podcast and lets the internet know that we are doing a good job. If you leave us a nice comment, we may even read it on the podcast. We will see you all next week.
Creepy later.
For part two. Bye, creepies.